always rushing, always anxious, forever warring. And his once quiet hallway, so far from the machines and pumps that really needed tending to, was now a busy thoroughfare. It was the entrance hall that mattered now, the funnel into which all the hate was poured. Screw the silo, the people above and the machines below. Just fight over this worthless patch of ground. Pile the bodies on either side until one gives. Do it because it was yesterday's cause, and because nobody wanted to remember back any further than yesterday. But Walker did. He remembered. The door to his workshop burst open. Through a gap in his filthy cocoon, Walker could see Jenkins, a boy in his 20s but with a beard that made him appear older. A boy who had inherited this mess the moment Knox died. The lad stormed through the maze of workbenches and scattered parts, aiming straight for Walker's cot.
"I'm up,"
Walker groaned, hoping Jenkins would go away.
"No, you're not."
Jenkins reached the cot and prodded Walker in the ribs with the barrel of his gun.
"Come on, old man, up."
Walker tensed away from him. He wiggled an arm loose to wave the boy away. Jenkins peered down gravely, a frown buried in his beard, his young eyes wrinkled with worry.
"We need that radio fixed, Walk. We're getting battered out there, and if I can't listen in, I don't think I can defend this place."
Walker tried to push himself upright. Jenkins grabbed the strap of his coveralls and gave him some rough assistance.
"I was up all night on it,"
Walker told him. He rubbed his face. His breath was awful.
"Is it fixed? We need that radio, Walk. You do know Hank risked his life to get that thing to us, right?"
"Well, he should have risked a bit more and sent a manual,"
Walker complained. He pressed his hands to his knees and, with much complaint from his joints, he stood and staggered toward the workbench, his blanket spilling to the floor in a heap. His legs were still half asleep, his hands tingling with the weak sensation of not being able to form a proper fist.
"I got the battery sorted," he told Jenkins. "Turns out that wasn't the problem."
Walker glanced toward his open door and saw Harper, a refinery worker turned soldier, standing in the doorway. Harper had become Jenks's number two when Peter was killed. Now he was peering down at Walker's breakfast, practically salivating into it.
"Help yourself,"
Walker called out. He waved dismissively at the steaming bowl. Harper glanced up, eyes wide, but that was as long as he hesitated. He leaned his rifle against the wall and sat down in the workshop doorway, shoveling food into his mouth. Jenkins grunted disapprovingly but didn't say anything.
"So, you see here?"
Walker showed him the arrangement on the workbench where various pieces of the small radio unit had been separated and were now wired together so everything was accessible.
"I've got constant power."
He patted the transformer he had built to bypass the battery.
"And the speakers work."
He keyed the transmission button and there was a pop and hiss of static from his bench speakers.
"But nothing comes through. They aren't saying anything."
He turned to Jenkins.
"I've had it on all night, and I'm not a deep sleeper."
Jenkins studied him.
"I would have heard,"
he insisted.
"They aren't talking."
Jenkins rubbed his face, made a fist. He kept his eyes closed, his forehead resting in one palm, a weariness in his voice.
"You think maybe something broke when you tore it apart?"
"Oh, disassembled,"
Walker said with a sigh.
"I didn't tear it apart."
Jenkins gazed up at the ceiling and relaxed his fist.
"So you think they aren't using them anymore, is that it? Do you reckon they know we have one? I swear I think this damn priest they sent is a spy. Shit's been falling apart since we let him in here to give last rites."
"I don't know what they're doing,"
Walker admitted.
"I think they're still using the radios, they've just excluded this one somehow. Look, I made another antenna, a stronger one."
He showed him the wires sneaking up from the workbench and spiraling around the steel beam rafters overhead. Jenkins followed his finger, then snapped his head toward the door. There was more shouting down the hallway. Harper stopped eating for a moment and listened, but only for a moment. He dug his spoon back into the corn mush.
I just need to know when I'll be able to listen in again.
Jenkins tapped the workbench with his finger, then picked his rifle back up.
I don't need to know about all this.
He waved a hand at Walker's work.
All this wizardry.
Walker plopped down on his favorite stool and peered at the myriad circuits that had once been jammed into the radio's cramped innards.
It's not wizardry, he said. It's electrics.
He pointed at two of the boards, connected by wires he had lengthened and re-soldered so he could analyze all the bits more closely.
I know what most of these do, but you've got to remember that nothing about these devices is known. Not outside of IT, anyway. I'm having to theorize while I tinker.
Jenkins rubbed the bridge of his nose.
Just let me know when you've got something. All your other work orders can wait. This is the only thing that matters. Got that?
Walker nodded. Jenkins turned and barked at Harper to get the hell off the floor. They left Walker on his stool, their boots picking up the beat of the music again. Alone, he stared down at the machine strung out across his workbench, its little green lights on its mysterious boards lit up and taunting him. His hand drifted to his magnifiers, as if by their own accord, as if by decades of habit, when all Walker really wanted was to crawl back into his cot, to wrap his cocoon around himself, to disappear. He needed help, he thought. He looked around at all that required doing, and, as ever, his thoughts turned to Scotty, his little shadow. There had been a slice of time, somewhere sliding away from him now and fading into the slippery past, where Walker had been a happy man, where his life should have ended to keep him from enduring any of the suffering beyond. But he had made it through that brief bliss and now could hardly recall it. He couldn't imagine what it felt like to rise with anticipation in the morning, to fall asleep with contentment at the end of every day. It was only fear and dread anymore, and between, regret. He had started all of this, all the noise and violence. Walker was convinced of that. Every life lost was on his wrinkled hands. Every tear shed was by his actions. Nobody said it, but he could feel them thinking it. One little message to supply, one favor for Juliet, just a chance at dignity, an opportunity to test her wild and horrible theory, to bury herself out of sight. And now, look at the cascade of events, the eruption of anger, the senseless violence. It wasn't worth it, he decided. This was how the math always added up. Not worth it. Nothing seemed worth it anymore. He bent over his workbench and set his old hands to tinkering. This was what he did, what he had always done. There was no escaping it now. No stopping those fingers with their papery skin, those palms with their deep lines that seemed to never end, not when they should. He followed those lines down to his bony wrists, where weak little veins ran like buried wire with blue insulation. One snip, and off he goes to see Scotty, to see Juliet. It was tempting. Especially since Walker figured, wherever they were, whether the priests were onto something or simply rat-shit mad, he figured both of his old friends were in far better places than he. 4. Silo 17. A tiny strand of copper wire stood at right angles to the rest. It was like a silo landing shooting off the great stairway, a bit of flat amid the twisted spiral. As Juliet wrapped the pads of her fingers around the wire and worked the splice into place, this jutting barb sank into her finger, stinging her like some angry insect. Juliet cursed and shook her hand. She very nearly dropped the other end of the wire, which would have sent it tumbling several levels down. She wiped the welling spot of blood onto her gray coveralls, then finished the splice and secured the wires to the railing to keep the strain off. She still didn't see how they had come loose, but everything in this cursed and dilapidated silo seemed to be coming apart. Her senses were the least of it. She leaned far out over the railing and placed her hand on the hodgepodge of pipes and tubing fastened to the concrete wall of the stairwell. She tried to discern, with hands chilled by the cool air of the deep, any vibration from water gurgling through the pipe.
"Anything?" she called down to Solo.
There seemed to be the slightest tremor in the plastic tubing, but it could have been her pulse rather than its.
"I think so!"
Solo's thin voice echoed from far below. Juliet frowned and peered down the dimly lit shaft, down that gap between steel step and thick concrete. She would have to go see for herself. Leaving her small tool bag on the steps, no danger of anyone coming along to trip over it, she took the treads two at a time and spiraled her way deeper into the silo. The electrical wiring on the long snake of pipe spun into view with each rotation, drips of purple adhesive marking every laborious joint she'd cut and fastened by hand. Other wiring ran alongside hers, electrical cables snaking from IT far above to power the grow lights of the lower farms. Juliet wondered who had rigged this stuff up. It hadn't been Solo. This wiring had been strung during the early days of Silo 17's downfall. Solo had simply become the lucky beneficiary of someone else's hard and desperate work. Grow lights now obeyed their timers. The greenery obeyed the urge to blossom, and beyond the stale stench of oil and gas, of floods and unmoving air, the ripe tinge of plants growing out of control could be nosed from several landings away. Juliet stopped at the landing of 136, the last dry landing before the flood. Solo had tried to warn her, had tried to tell her even as she lusted over the image of the massive diggers on the wall-sized schematic. Hell, she should have known about the flood without being told. Groundwater was forever seeping into her own silo, a hazard of living below the water table. Without power to the pumps, the water would naturally make its way in and rise. Out on the landing, she leaned on the steel railing and caught her breath. A dozen steps below, Solo stood on the single dry tread their efforts had exposed her own silo, a hazard of living below the water table. Without power to the pumps, the water would naturally make its way in and rise. Out on the landing, she leaned on the steel railing and caught her breath. A dozen steps below, Solo stood on the single dry tread their efforts had exposed. Nearly 3 weeks of wiring and plumbing, of scrapping a good section of the lower hydroponics farm, of finding a pump and routing the overflow to the water treatment facility tanks, and they had uncovered a single step. Solo turned and smiled up at her.
"It's working, right?"
He scratched his head, his wild hair jutting at all angles, his beard flecked with gray that his youthful jubilance denied. The hopeful question hung in the air, a cloud visible from the cold of the down deep. "It's not working enough," Juliet told him, annoyed with the progress. She peered over the railing, past the jutting toes of borrowed boots, and to the colorful slick of water below. The mirrored surface of oil and gas stood perfectly still. Beneath this coat of slime, the emergency lights of the stairwell glowed eerily green, lending the depths a haunting look that matched the rest of the empty silo. In that silence, Juliet heard a faint gurgle in the pipe beside her. She even thought she could hear the distant buzz of the submerged pump a dozen or so feet below the oil and gas. She tried to will the water up that tube, up 20 levels and hundreds of joints to the vast and empty treatment tanks above. Solo coughed into his fist.
"What if we install another?"
Juliet raised her hand to quiet him. She was doing the math. The volume of the 8 levels of mechanical was difficult to figure. So many corridors and rooms that may or may not be flooded. But she could guess the height of the cylindrical shaft from Solo's feet to the security station. The lone pump had moved the level of the flood a little less than a foot in 2 weeks. 80 or 90 feet to go. With another pump, say a year to get to the entrance of mechanical. Depending on how watertight the intervening levels were, it could be much more. Mechanical itself could take 3 or 4 times as long to clear.
"What about another pump?" Solo insisted.
Juliet felt nauseous. Even with 3 more of the small pumps from the hydroponic farms, and with 3 more runs of pipe and wiring to go with them, she was looking at a year, possibly 2, before the silo was perfectly dry. She wasn't sure if she had a year. Just a few weeks of being in that abandoned place, alone with a half-sane man, and she was already starting to hear whispers. To forget where she was leaving things, finding lights on she swore she'd turned off. Either she was going crazy, or Solo found humor in making her feel that way. 2 years of this life, of her home so close but so impossibly far away. She leaned over the railing, feeling like she really might be sick. As she gazed down at the water and through her reflection cast in that film of oil, she suddenly considered risks even crazier than 2 years of near solitude. 2 years, she told Solo. It felt like voicing a death sentence. 2 years. That's how long this'll take if we add 3 more pumps. 6 months at least on the stairwell, but the rest will go slower.
2 years, Solo sung. 2 years, 2 years.
He tapped his boot twice against the water on the step below, sending her reflection into sickening waves of distortion. He spun in place, peering up at her.
Well, that's no time.
Juliet fought to control her frustration. 2 years would feel like forever. And what would they find down there anyway? What condition would the main generator be in, or the diggers? A machine, submerged under fresh water, might be preserved as long as air didn't get to it, but as soon as any of it was exposed by the pumps, the corrosion would begin. It was the nastiness of oxygen working on wet metal that spelled doom for anything useful down here. Machines and tools would need to be dried immediately and then oiled, and with only 2 of them... Juliet watched, horrified, as Solo bent down, waved away the film of grease at his feet, and scooped up 2 palms of the brackish filth below. He slurped noisily and happily. Okay, with only 1 of them working diligently at salvaging the machines, it wouldn't be enough. Maybe she'd be able to salvage the backup generator. It would require less work and still provide plenty of power.
"What to do for 2 years?"
Solo asked, wiping his beard with the back of his hand and looking up at her. Juliet shook her head. "Oh, we're not waiting 2 years," she told him. The last 3 weeks in Silo 17 had been too much. This she didn't say.
"Okay,"
he said, shrugging. He clomped up the stairwell in his 2 big boots. His gray coveralls were also baggy, like he was still trying to wear clothing tailored for his father. He joined Juliet on the landing, smiled at her through his glistening beard.
"You look like you have more projects," he said, happily.
She nodded silently. Anything the 2 of them worked on, whether it was fixing the sloppy wiring of the long-ago dead, or improving the farms, or repairing a light fixture's ballast, Solo referred to as a project. And he professed to love projects. She decided it was something from his youth, some sort of survival mechanism he'd concocted over the years that allowed him to tackle whatever needed doing with a smile instead of horror or loneliness. "Oh, we've got quite a project ahead of us," Juliet told him, already dreading the job. She started making a mental list of all the tools and spares they'd need to scrounge on their way back up. Solo laughed and clapped his hands.
Good, he said. Back to the workshop.
He twirled his finger over his head, pointing up at the long climb ahead of them. Not yet, she said. First, some lunch at the farms. Then we need to stop by supply for more things, and then I need some time alone in the server room. Juliet turned away from the railing and that deep shaft of silver-green water below. Before we get started in the workshop, she said, I'd like to make a call.
A call? Solo pouted. Not a call. You spend all your time on that stupid thing.
Juliet ignored him and hit the stairs. She began the long slog up, her fifth in 3 weeks. And she knew Solo was right. She was spending too much time making calls, too much time with those headphones pulled down over her ears, listening to them beep. She knew it was crazy, that she was going slowly mad in that place, but sitting at the back of that empty server with her microphone close to her lips and the world made quiet by the cups over her ears, just having that wire linking her from a dead world to one that harbored life, it was the closest she could get in Silo 17 to making herself feel sane.
5. Silo 18 was the year the Civil War consumed the 33 states. More American lives were lost in this conflict than in all the subsequent ones combined, for any death was a death among kin. For 4 years the land was ravaged, smoke clearing over battlefields of ruin to reveal brother heaped upon brother. More than 500,000 lives were lost. Some estimates ranged to almost twice that. Disease, hunger, and heartbreak ruled the life of man. The pages of the book flashed crimson just as Lucas was getting to the descriptions of the battlefields. He stopped reading and glanced up at the overhead lights. Their steady white had been replaced with a throbbing red, which meant someone was in the server room above him. He retrieved the loose silver thread curled up on the knee of his coveralls and laid it carefully into the spine of the book. Closing the old tome, he returned it to its tin case with care, then slid it into the gap on the bookshelf, completing the vast wall of silvery spines. Padding silently across the room, he bent down in front of the computer and shook the mouse to wake the screen. A window popped up with live views of the servers, only distorted from such wide angles. It was another secret in a room overflowing with them, this ability to see distant places. Lucas searched through the cameras, wondering if it was Sammy or another tech coming to make a repair. His grumbling stomach, meanwhile, hoped it was someone bringing him lunch. In camera 4, he finally spotted his visitor, a short figure in gray coveralls, sporting a mustache and glasses. He was slightly stooped, a tray in his hands dancing with silverware, a sloshing glass of water, and a covered plate, all of it partly supported by his protruding belly. Bernard glanced up at the camera as he walked by, his eyes piercing Lucas from a level away, a tight smile curling below his mustache. Lucas left the computer and hurried down the hallway to get the hats for him, his bare feet slapping softly on the cool steel grating. He scrambled up the ladder with practiced ease and slid the worn red locking handle to the side. Just as he lifted the grate, Bernard's shadow threw the ladderway into darkness. The tray came to a clattering rest as Lucas shifted the section of flooring out of the way.
"I'm spoiling you today," Bernard said.
He sniffed and uncovered the plate. A fog of trapped steam billowed out of the metal hood, two stacks of pork ribs revealing themselves underneath.
"Wow."
Lucas felt his stomach rumble at the sight of the meat. He lifted himself out of the hatch and sat on the floor, feet dangling down by the ladder. He pulled the tray into his lap and picked up the silverware.
"Wow. I thought we had the silo on strict rations, at least until the resistance was over."
He cut a piece of tender meat free and popped it in his mouth.
Not that I'm complaining, mind you.
He chewed and savored the rush of proteins, reminded himself to be thankful of the animal's sacrifice.
The rations haven't been lifted, Bernard said.
He crouched down and waved at the plate.
We had a pocket of resistance flare up in the bazaar, and this poor guy found himself in the crossfire. I wasn't about to let him go to waste. Most of the meat, of course, went to the wives and husbands of those we've lost.
Hmm, Lucas swallowed. How many?
5, plus the 3 from the first attack.
Lucas shook his head.
It's not bad, considering.
Bernard brushed his mustache with his hand and watched Lucas eat. Lucas gestured with his fork while he chewed, offering him some, but Bernard waved him away. The older man leaned back on the empty server that housed the uplink and the locking handle for the ladderway. Lucas tried not to react.
So, how long will I need to stay in here?
He tried to sound calm, like any answer would do.
It's been 3 weeks, right?
He cut off another bite, ignoring the vegetables.
You think a few more days?
Bernard rubbed his cheeks and ran his fingers up through his thinning hair.
I hope, but I don't know. I've left it up to Sims, who's convinced the threat isn't over. Mechanical has themselves barricaded pretty good down there. They've threatened to cut the power, but I don't think they will. I think they finally get that they don't control the juice up here on our levels. They probably tried to cut it before they stormed in, and then were surprised to see us all lit up.
You don't think they'll cut the power to the farms, do you?
He was thinking of the rations, his fear of the silo being starved. Bernard frowned.
Eventually, maybe, if they get desperate enough, but that'll just erode whatever support those greasers have up here. Don't worry, they'll get hungry enough and give in. It's all going by the book.
Lucas nodded and took a sip of water. The pork was the best he thought he'd ever had.
Speaking of the book, Bernard asked, are you catching up with your studies?
Yeah,
Lucas lied. He nodded. In truth, he had hardly touched the Book of Order. The more interesting details were found elsewhere.
Good. When this annoyance is over, we'll schedule you some extra shifts in the server room. You can spend that time shadowing. Once we reschedule the election, and I don't think anyone else will run, especially not after all this, I'll be up top a lot more. IT will be yours to run.
Lucas set down the glass and picked up the cloth napkin. He wiped his mouth and thought about this.
Well, I hope you're not talking weeks from now. I feel like I've got years of...
A buzzing noise cut him off. Lucas froze, the napkin falling out of his hand and flopping to the tray. Bernard startled away from the server like it had physically shocked him, or as if its black metallic skin had grown suddenly warm.
God damn it,
he said, banging the server with his fist. He fumbled inside his coveralls for his master key. Lucas forced himself to take a bite of food, to act normal. Bernard had grown more and more agitated by the constant ringing of the server. It made him irrational. It was like living with his father again, back before the tub gin finally bore him a hole beneath the potatoes.
I fucking swear,
Bernard grumbled, working the series of locks in sequence. He glanced over at Lucas, who slowly chewed a piece of meat, unable suddenly to even taste it.